So all hour long, we've been exploring, at least in a contemporary sense, the challenge of finding leadership to bring nations in the midst of change toward democracy. It's a new story in the Middle East, but it's a really old story. And if you're looking at English history, some of the most ruthless monarchs who also held their nation together were women. Helen Castor is a historian who's been delving into the lives of these powerful but largely unrecognized women from as far back as 900 years ago who ruled England before Queen Elizabeth I. She's the author of the book She-Wolves, The Women Who Ruled England Before Elizabeth. She joins us from the studios of our partner, the BBC in London. Helen, good morning.
Good morning, John.
So describe for us a leadership crisis that might have produced someone such as Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Well, the thing was about power in the Middle Ages that everyone assumed that it was male, but they also assumed that power would be handed on from father to son. The difficulty came when there wasn't a son to hand and you only had a daughter. So someone like Eleanor of Aquitaine's mother-in-law, Matilda, should have been Queen of England, didn't quite get there because it turned out that her nobles thought she was just a bit too female to fit the role. So someone like Eleanor of Aquitaine managed to get her hands on power because she was the wife of a king and the mother of a king. And that way women could sometimes work around the edges of a power structure that assumed you had to be male to rule.
So in the Middle Ages, the genetic credential got you at least the crown, but to maintain it, you had to develop a sense of extreme ruthlessness to fight off the male challenges to power.
You certainly did, because everyone assumed that a ruler had to be a soldier, had to be able to lead troops in battle, had to be able to make law, had to be able to be a judge, and everyone assumed women couldn't do that. Someone like Eleanor of Aquitaine, who was an absolutely extraordinary woman, who was Queen of France before she became Queen of England, went on crusade, did all manner of things that we don't assume women could do in the Middle Ages, and lived to be 80 on top of all of that. She had to have a very, very ferociously able political mind in order to work the levers of power to her advantage.
And does her credibility, and she's remembered at least in her time as being a credible leader, does it come from her holding on to power, or is it something about her demeanor, her personality, the sort of charismatic kinds of criteria we use to describe contemporary leaders that made her, if not beloved, at least respected by the people she ruled over?
I think it had to be both. The difficulty in writing medieval history is that it's hard to get a sense of personality because we don't have letters, we don't have diaries, we don't have speeches recorded. But you do get a sense of Eleanor's charisma when you investigate her life because she was an absolutely extraordinary woman who clearly could command allegiance despite this being a time when people assumed that women were very much there to be supplementary and handmaidens and so on. She first of all led her sons in rebellion against her own husband, and he clearly thought she was so dangerous that he put her in prison for 15 years. It was after that, when her husband died, that she emerged from prison as a sort of elder stateswoman, and it was at that point that she held England together when her son Richard the Lionheart was away on crusade for years, and she became sort of the mother of the kingdom as well as the mother of the king.
And she was perceived as such by her subjects. We're talking with Helen Castor, who's the author of She-Wolves, The Women Who Ruled England Before Elizabeth. Tell us about Isabella of France. We're talking about the 14th century here. The Middle Ages are beginning to wane. What did this woman bring to leadership?
She brought an absolutely ruthless sense of entitlement. She was a French princess who married Edward II of England, and she started out trying to be the perfect wife to him, trying to provide him with sons and make peace with his nobles and so on. But Edward was someone who was much more interested in gadding about with the love of his life, a man named Piers Gaveston, who was a rather glamorous knight at his court, than he was either in Isabella or in minor matters like fighting the Scottish War that was devastating the north of England. So Isabella ended up leading resistance to her husband with her lover at her side. She brought an army to challenge and in the end depose him and in the end murder him in order to save England from his clutches and put their son, the young Edward III, on the throne instead. So she was an absolutely formidable figure.
And Margaret of Anjou?
she to the Wars of the Roses, which many people will know from Shakespeare, were a terrible period in English history in the 15th century. Margaret's husband, Henry VI, was a complete non-entity, really. He just drifted about the place saying yes to any question he was asked, which meant he wasn't a good king at all. And the Lancastrian cause, their side in the Wars of the Roses, wouldn't have kept going if it hadn't been for Margaret. Much tougher than her husband. Mm.
No softies here. There are four women that make up the stories in your book, the she-wolves, the women who ruled England before Elizabeth. Here's a sort of a more personal question, and it's not necessarily in the text of the book. First of all, did you find yourself envying any of these people, either in terms of the leadership they showed or the predicaments that they managed to get themselves out of?
I didn't envy them their predicaments one bit, but the formidable energy and intelligence and resolve and will that they showed in surviving the challenges they faced, I admired hugely. And I also kind of envied Eleanor of Aquitaine's life, because I just think if you're going to, you know, if you've got 80 years, to pack as much in as she did was just phenomenal.
And 80 years in the medieval period is like 160 years today, that's
exactly,
for sure.
Exactly. And she crossed the Pyrenees, the mountains, for the last time at the age of 76. When you think no cars, no tarmac roads, you're on a horse, it's very uncomfortable. She was just a phenomenon.
Finally, any sense from any of these women that they had a vision for the constitutional land ruled by the sovereign people as much as a sovereign king of England today?
I think we have to remember that while there may be many points of contact with these women, they were medieval women. They saw the world through medieval eyes. Most of them, in fact, shared contemporary opinions of what women could do. I mean, if we look at Elizabeth I, with whom I come to whom I come at the very, very end of the book, she believed that women were weak and feeble. It was just that she was an exceptional woman who could do things other women couldn't. So I think we have to be careful not to put contemporary attitudes into their minds too much.
Well, it's not a solid line, but it's a fascinating narrative from then till now. Helen Castor is the author of She-Wolves, The Women Who Ruled England Before Elizabeth. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Certainly, Eleanor of Aquitaine will be judged better by history than Muammar Gaddafi. As he clings to power, we've been keeping track of the latest from Libya. Here's a couple of headlines. Muammar Gaddafi's forces reportedly striking back at his opponents with special forces, regular army troops, and fighter jets. The Pentagon reportedly repositioning Navy warships ahead of a possible intervention, which could include a no-fly zone. And the Obama administration has seized $30 billion in Libyan assets. Follow more of the latest by heading to our site, thetakeaway.org. We've been hearing from lots of listeners during the uprising within our own borders in Wisconsin. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE to share any of your ideas on the search for leadership, whether leadership provides a path to democracy or a path away from it, whether we're talking about the Middle East, Wisconsin, or Washington. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out today. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.